On this episode of Hear Us Out, you'll be hearing from Jacqueline Briggs, who is a teacher of the deaf and a music educator.
Jacqueline had a sudden hearing loss after a car accident. And what a sudden hearing loss is exactly what it sounds like. You can hear, and then all of a sudden you can't. And the vast majority of cases, it's occurring in one ear. So you can have one ear that's just fine and one ear that is not working for you at all. And that's what happened to Jacqueline.
And this turned her world upside down. She was an aspiring musician at age 17, and all of those plans were just ripped away right after that car accident. So not only did she have to navigate her challenges of suddenly losing hearing in one ear, she also had to navigate through changing her whole life dream.
And one of the things that you're going to learn within her story is how changes at the FDA and changes in guidelines for cochlear implants gave her new options, and how that really helped her and was really a benefit to her.
We'll learn the hopeful words from Jacqueline that the future you plan might not be the future you get, but it doesn't mean it's not bright.
And on the Hear Us Out podcast, you get to hear unique stories that have common threads. So welcome, Jacqueline.
Thank you so much, Jacqueline, for coming on the Hear Us Out podcast. We met at in Ajisha, where you had done a talk on the second half of the conference, and I learned a little bit about your story, but only the surface level. So why don't you tell us your story, because you were not born with hearing loss, if I can recall.
No, I wasn't. I was born with typical hearing in both ears, but I lost the hearing in my right ear in a car accident when I was 17.
And could I ask what happened? What happened in the accident?
You know, this is kind of a crazy story. And I have to tell you, it's actually unraveled over the course of like 15 years or so. We don't really know. So at first, I'll share that I was a passenger in a car that was T-boned on the right-hand side. So the other car that, like, the cars hit, and the other car hit my seat, basically. And my seat pretty much didn't exist anymore when the accident occurred, but I was still in it. And so I sustained like a number of injuries. I had several broken bones down the right side of my body, and I had sustained a pretty significant head injury. What the original scans show, was a skull fracture that they thought was closer to the auditory nerve. And so even at the time, though, this is 15 years ago, though. At that time, the FDA didn't approve implants for single-sided deafness. So that was never presented to me as an option. It was just sort of, you could have a Baha or you could do the cross hearing aid. But because I had a skull fracture, nobody was really interested in doing the Baha surgery. I didn't have any amplification for about 10 years. And then I was actually working on my master's as a teacher of the deaf. And I went for an audiogram. It's a kind of a weird story as to how it all panned out. I had some really crazy vertigo spells, was trying to figure out what was going on. So I went to see an otolaryngologist. I saw Dr. Lawrence Lessig at Columbia and found out, they ran some scans and they found out that the injury that was originally noted in the MRIs wasn't what they thought. So they didn't note any scarring. They didn't note... They couldn't even tell that there had necessarily been a skull fracture. It didn't look like there had been one. So after that appointment, which was, I think, October, I was implanted the following, like, December, like a month and a half later. So it happened very, very fast once we found out that the ear anatomy was the way that it should be for me to receive an implant. The problem was that I was approaching 10 years. I was coming up on the 10-year anniversary of my car accident. And so insurance was a fight. And so we moved pretty quick.
When you had gotten the implant, was that after the FDA approval had come in for single-sided, or was it still off-label at that point?
It was around the same time. So at the point at which I got my implant, I met one other person that had a CI, and I was working at a school, and there was a child that had a single-sided implant, but I'd never met them. And so now I'm seeing that a lot more, and I've become a mentor for those who are considering it, because I didn't have anybody to talk to. So it was right on the cusp of when people were starting to pay attention to that, because this was in 2018, and I was reading research on myself that like on my situation, a unilateral loss, single-sided deafness, that hadn't been published until 2016. So it was right around the time when all of this stuff was starting to change.
Now, when you were implanted, how were you counseled in terms of expectations or timelines or how long you can expect the adjustment period to be?
Yeah, so this is interesting. I didn't have fabulous expectations going in. And sort of the reason for that was because we didn't know the nature of the injury that I had sustained. So we thought it was one thing and then it turned out to be something else. And then it had been 10 years. And so we didn't know, there'd been no auditory stimulation. So we really just didn't know. Nobody really knew what to expect. The reason I was going for the implant to begin with is because I had really bad tinnitus in that right ear. But I didn't know how badly it was affecting me until they started doing assessments to see how this is affecting your life. And it literally was to the point where I wasn't sleeping. I couldn't sit in a quiet room. Like my focus was horrible. And so after I looked at all of these scores that I had, I was like, wow, that's kind of a big deal. This has been affecting me for a long time and I had no idea. So I was going to get the cochlear implant to see if it helped silence the tinnitus so that I could function on a day-to-day basis.
We have those situations for the patients that we call them the patients that have tinnitus versus the tinnitus patients, that their primary motive is resolving, managing the tinnitus aspect, whether or not the hearing gets better is a secondary.
Yeah. I still think, and I talked to a couple different people about it because I was a little anxious at the time. And one of the best pieces of advice I ever got on that is I had no more hearing to lose. It's not like getting the implant was going to take away any residual hearing. I had none. And so when I was thinking about this, you know, it was sort of like presented to me as like, here are your options. You know, you can live with the way things are right now. You have been. You've been living this way. And so if you go to get the cochlear implant and you don't like it, the worst thing that happens is you've gone through the surgery and you don't wear the processor, but you're no worse off than you are right now. So I looked at that situation and I was kind of like, well, you know, what do I have to lose? And so when I went in for the surgery, I remember my audiologist telling me after the surgery, and I was in the recovery room, that they had tested the implant in the surgery and that the auditory nerve responded really, really well. So it went from being like, not sure if she's going to respond at all to now we knew I was going to hear something, but we didn't know what I would hear. And the day that it was activated, which was about a month after my surgery, the day I was activated, I was already hearing, which I know that this is not the norm. I was already hearing syllables and voices. I wasn't necessarily sure what they were saying, but I was getting the syllables of speech. And everybody sounded like Donald Duck.
So it went from a situation where there was a lot of uncertainty as far as what this was going to be for you to a high degree of confidence that this was going to be to some degree successful.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it was a lot of work. I don't want to throw that out there and say that it was it was easy and it just sort of came to me. I worked hard to make that cochlear implant work for me. But it's been. I really enjoy it. I still work hard on it. I listen through it, stream through it all the time. And just having that processor there for me gives me added confidence to navigate my life. Cause there's so many things I was missing before. I was even talking to somebody the other day about the times that I used to like step off a curb and not hear a car coming. That's like a scary thing to think about.
Especially with the single sided that you can't always localize where sound is coming from.
Yeah.
And the Baja wouldn't necessarily, or a cross wouldn't necessarily help with that. So yeah. The CI is your best option for that.
Yeah,
how did it help your tinnitus, or did it help your tinnitus?
So when my processor is on, I have none. I have no tinnitus in that right ear, which was a life changer. And then sometimes when it's off and I'm sick, oddly, if I'm congested, I get tinnitus back, but it's nothing like what it used to be.
So it's interesting that you say that, because we have a conversation with our patients when it comes to an implant, and also hearing aids when you have tinnitus, that you may notice relief as a side effect, a positive side effect of the devices. And it sounds like for you, it's done exactly that. So you get the benefit of both treating the hearing loss and having this relief from tinnitus. Now, it doesn't serve that purpose for everyone, but in your case, the fact that you had that positive side effect is wonderful.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Now, we also say with our patients that music is probably the last thing to sound good. So how is adjusting back to music, especially because you still have one normal hearing ear, that is it, was it difficult or easier to acclimate to music again with it sounding so different on each side?
Yeah. So I get asked this question quite a bit, and I haven't quite come up with an answer that I'm happy with that explains what I hear. But there was quite a discrepancy, and everything in the processor sounded insanely robotic when I was first listening through it. I listened to, there's a music therapist on the University of Iowa's cochlear implant team, Kate Gefeller, and I had followed her research for a long time. And she's somebody that I've connected with again recently. I met her once, fell all over myself, and then recently connected with her again. But I had followed her research. And so after I got implanted, I kept thinking, well, she's a music therapist. I'm a music teacher. I can do this for myself. I can figure out how to make this work. So I would, and what I had done after I lost my hearing was I did everything by how it felt. So I was a singer and I was getting ready to go to four-year universities and lost my hearing. And then all of that was sort of put on hold because now I had this traumatic event that had changed the course of my life and I had to basically start all over. So I learned how to do everything by how it felt. So I used to sing barefoot, or if I was singing, if I was singing for a concert or a group of people, I always made sure that I had my one hand or something on the piano lid because then I could feel the pulses of the piano in my body. And then I was like, okay, as long as I can figure out where the pitch is, I'm good. I can do this as long as I can feel it.
Those are major compensatory strategies.
I've been trying to figure this out for a really long time. And so then when I got the cochlear implant, I kind of took a step back and I said, all right, I want to do the same thing. I'm going to approach this in the same way. What strategies can I use to make this work for myself? Mainly because I don't like when people tell me no. Like, I was going to go into music, and so I found a way to do it anyway. And so this was kind of one of those things. I was like, I'm going to figure out how to use this. I'm going to figure out how to make it work. And so I started playing with, like, what do I need to do to have this happen for me? One of the most beneficial things for me was streaming, like, my favorite songs. I would connect to Bluetooth and use streaming from my phone to my processor, and I would stream songs I knew inside out and backwards. Like, if somebody played one note, two notes in that song, I'd be like, I know what song that is. And so I started playing them through my processor, and I had to let my brain take this new meaning it was getting and attach it to memories, auditory memories I already had. And that took a while. I was also streaming podcasts. I was trying to make meaning out of everything that I could to make this processor work. And I worked really hard at it. Now there's a point at which I'm always aware of what's coming through the processor. I'll be very clear about that. There's a discrepancy between the processor, because it's not acoustic hearing, and then my typically hearing ear, which is. But there's a point in my brain that they merge. And so the sounds to me are like, I know what's going on, but this input means something to me now, and I can do something with it. When I sing, actually, it's helped me a lot with, there were frequencies I don't think I processed well, or because there was so much sound coming into just the one ear that I was hearing everything through that side. There were some frequencies that I don't know how to explain. I don't think I sang them well, probably because of how I processed them when I was singing. And a lot of that is coming back to me now. And this is, we're talking 5 years out, almost five and a half. And now my husband is also a vocal coach. He's a voice instructor. And so one of the things that he'll do is he'll take my mini mic and he'll sing Christmas carols. And it's my job to figure out what key he's in. Now, I'm not real good at this one yet, but I get close. So he'll sing like the first line of some familiar tune, and I try and finish it in the same key that he started. I do really well, but I'm not good with this one yet. So
it's a fun exercise.
I love doing it. We've recorded it a couple times to see how close I am. And it's the difference of like, I'm not far off, but I'm close. So,
you know, you say about listening to familiar music. We had this conversation earlier today with a patient that was a CI activation and trying to explain how to get used to this electrical stimulation that we would say, pick songs that are familiar to you, that your brain knows what they sound like, that you have those auditory memories of, and your brain can start to learn what is this electrical information I'm getting and how should I be interpreting it and what is it representing. So again, the fact that you did that is something that a lot of people find very, very helpful in the acclimation period for a CI implantation. So these are all great ideas that you've implemented that I think have largely contributed to your success. So that's really great.
Yeah, definitely. I feel fortunate to have had some of the connections that I had both in the music field and being a teacher of the deaf. And so there was a lot of things that I was able to just take and put together, and I found things that worked for me.
Was being a teacher of the deaf something that was in your plan before this accident, or did that come into play afterwards?
No, it was not in my plan, but the fact that I went into it actually wasn't surprising at all. My mom, both my parents are music teachers, and we had some friends when we were younger, and my mom learned how to sign so she could communicate with her friend's daughter. So I was exposed to that as a little kid. And then after I lost my hearing and was trying to figure out how I could still be part of music, I'm going to backtrack for just a quick second and say, when I lost my hearing, I was kind of pleading with people like, I'm a musician, want to go to school for this. This has been my dream. I've been working on this for years. Can you do anything? And basically the answer I got was like, pick something else. You'll be fine. Also along with the, you have one good ear, you'll be fine. And we know so much more about this now than we did when I lost my hearing. So after I went through my car accident and I was recovering, I completed an associate's in music and I went on and I did vocal performance. I had a voice in the back of my head that was like, I need to be able to recreate and do for others what I've been able to do for myself. And I specifically wanted to do it with kids in early intervention. And then also I love working with adults as well. So I went on, I did 2 masters back to back so that I could be a music educator and a teacher of the deaf that worked with people with hearing loss and used music to do it. So that's been my life's goal. And I've been working on that for probably the better part of a decade, working on different strategies and curriculum-based things that I hope one day to publish. But that was the presentation that I put in Disha was a culmination of probably 10 years worth of work.
Wow, that's fabulous. Good for you.
Thanks.
Shooting for the stars.
Just to explain, NJSHA is the New Jersey Speech and Hearing Association, where you had presented this past spring.
Yes.
What are people's attitudes when they first come to you? Is there any discouragement on their end or even disbelief that music appreciation or music educating with CI can be accomplished?
No, I think I've run into a lot of people that want to find the ways to do it similarly, that want to be able to support patients or support other CI candidates. And then CI candidates that I've spoken to, I don't know if I'm jumping the gun here, but try that again. I don't know if I'm jumping ahead here, but CI candidates that I've spoken to have, they just want to be able to appreciate music. So when I speak to them about this, this is one of the biggest questions I always have is what does music sound like? And I always start with the caveat that, well, this is my experience, but it may not be yours. And these are the things that I did. And I say that I do think that music appreciation is 100% possible, but it's not just as simple as putting on the processor and connecting the magnet. So, yeah.
There's something that you had just said about everyone's experience being different that stands out for me. And hearing different people's stories what we find is there are a lot of common threads, but everybody's is unique. And one of the ways that we describe it is in understanding what somebody's experience is, we can say that, hey, people in your situation have a similar experience, but their timeline, it doesn't mean that you're going to follow that timeline. Their exact experience doesn't mean that's going to be your exact experience. But there are some very familiar threads in stories like yours.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I've met especially a lot of candidates for single-sided deafness. This being a mentor, the stories are all unique. And I love getting to meet people. I love being able to be a small part of their journey with them. And what I think is fabulous is being able to hear their stories and to share mine and to find even the people that I'm speaking to will talk about vestibular issues that we all have or vertigo issues. And I had somebody that I spoke with, a wonderful individual, was sending me resources on things that they had done to help with some of the vertigo that they were dealing with. And so you're right about that. Like there's common threads in a lot of the stories, different things that we all deal with, but deal with them differently. Yeah, I find it really amazing, actually.
There's another thing that we've also, as audiologists, have been doing differently as we've had more cases like yours that are single-sided hearing loss that have led to cochlear implantation, is what we tend to find is what I'll call the typical cochlear implant patient that's a progressive hearing loss in both ears. Within 6 months, you know what your performance is going to be. You've probably reached peak performance. What we find with single-sided cases is they take a bit longer. Because that brain has the normal hearing reference point, it's more of a process to adapt to having that electrical stimulation on one side. So for people who are considering cochlear implantation for a single-sided hearing loss, expect that it's probably going to be closer to 9 months to a year till you have a good understanding of what the device is going to do for you, not the typical explanation of 6 months with a progressive hearing loss.
That's a question I get a lot, is how long did it take? And I don't know that I could pinpoint a moment. I've tried to think about this, and I always give this one memory, but I couldn't tell you when it happened. It's just something that stands out in my mind. I was streaming a video to my processor, and I'd been activated for at the very least 8 months. I was streaming a video and I wasn't watching it. So my phone was turned over and I was doing something else. But it was a video that my father had made about his company. And so I'm listening to the video because we wanted some feedback on it. And all of a sudden his voice pops up and it sounded exactly like what I knew his voice sounded like. And I remember thinking, oh, that's my dad. And then I realized that I was hearing his voice through my cochlear implant processor. And it was a moment of, it was sort of surreal, because I remember thinking, okay, all of the things that I've been doing and all of the things that I've been working on it's working. This is a moment that it's working, but it was the first time that I noticed that it was working. And it was several months after I had been implanted. And then also, that sticks out, but then I stopped streaming, right? And I had to go back to like the everyday of, this is what's going on, this is what I'm hearing, let's keep working on this. So for that isolated video that was streaming to the processor, I got what I needed from that. I was able to hear and attach to the auditory memory that I had of my dad's voice. But it wasn't instant. So there was that one moment, and I still had to keep going to continue to make progress with that.
And tell us about some of the frustration, because here it's at least 8 months out until you have that sort of moment. Tell us about some of the frustrations earlier on in the process, because I do think it's important that people understand, and we try and counsel our patients about this, that it is absolutely a process. It is not something that is plug and play and works probably as you expected it to work on day one. But it's a process. And through that process, you have these moments of, oh, wow, this is why I did it.
Ooh, so it there were moments it made me nauseous because of the overstimulation. It had been so long since I'd had any stimulation in that side that when I was in loud places, I'd have to take it off or I would just altogether have to leave. When I first put the processor on after it was activated, I had a day where I was just very nauseous from wearing it. And then after that, it was just based off circumstances. It was if this was loud, if I was overstimulated in another way, if I was car sick, I had to take off the processor.
Were you experiencing vertigo in those moments with the loud sounds?
Yes. We hear that sometimes. Yeah.
Yep.
I had dealt with vertigos before I got the cochlear implant, and that was related to the brain injury that I had. So it was sort of a double whammy in that.
But
now that I have a better grasp of what I hear going into the situation, I just turn it down. Mm-hmm. Like never thought to do that before.
Yep. And do you have any idea if in your mappings, if your access to some of the really, really high frequencies was limited? Because that's something that we oftentimes do with single-sided recipients, because you know highs in your normal ear and referencing those highs in the electrical stimulation that are really high can potentially be challenging.
This is funny that it's so funny that you just said this, because at my last audiology appointment, it's like in April, we were talking about that because every time that she tested the high frequency, I would wince. And so we actually just talked about that and did some things to change it. My mapping now has been fabulous. I love it right now. So yes, I do think.
Yeah, we're finding a lot of success with that trick of cutting the very highs out. Like instead of having the stimulation go out to 7,900 hertz, maybe you're cutting it as low as 6,400. That because you have normal hearing in the highs in the other ear, just your brain to reference those two can be more challenging.
And you're probably also a really good reporter because you're musical, you understand frequencies and you understand volume, that there are certain times with patients that whenever we try and have them differentiate between pitch and volume, they just can't. They can't tell the difference. But having your background probably makes it easier for the audiologist in some ways.
I sure try. You'd have to ask my audiologist about that. I find my audiology appointments actually quite funny. So we spend a long time in there because I enjoy being with my audiologist. And then, you know, they stick me in the booth and you're supposed to remember these phrases while you have all the background noises. And of course, the only ones that I hear are the ones that are like, I think it's time to lose weight. I'm like, why are you sending me subliminal messages?
I feel like most of the sentences are these nonsense sentences. So maybe that's why you don't know them.
But when I do, like when you have to remember the sentence with like the background noise, it's like it's supposed to be nonsense because you're supposed to be able to remember and hear the sentence and repeat it in a large crowd. But I just always remember the funny ones. I remember the funny sentences that come out in the booth. But yeah, I think that I think I try my best to be a good reporter.
So one question I've been asking the people we've been speaking with, whether it's parents or patients, recipients, what in your experience could the audiologists have done better for you? What would you want us to know as the clinicians that will help our patients? What would have made your hearing loss process easier for you?
I might even broaden that also to say the other, like other medical professionals as well, because it sounds like there was some discouragement of like the directions you could take based on your hearing loss.
Yeah. Part of that I think was the timing of that. And also I was a teenager, 17 years old. I think that at the time they were limited in what they could offer me. And so my choices were limited to, you know, there are these sort of pieces of listening equipment for you, or you go without. I think it was just, there's so many things that everybody was dealing with at that time. And I remember like talking to my parents when I lost my hearing and thinking, to me, the hearing loss was huge, but to the doctors who were saving my life, they were trying to save my life. And so to them, they weren't focused on my hearing loss. I had sustained numerous other injuries. And so they literally were, you know, I was in the ICU for a long time and before I was transferred to a pediatric floor. And then I went on to spend time in a rehab hospital. So, I mean, they were working hard to make sure that I was okay. And so when I think about that time, I think maybe the manner in which I was told about my hearing loss and then heard, you have one good ear, you'll be fine. Because I still have families that I work with that hear that, and it breaks my heart. As we know so much more now. And so when they share this with me, that this is what they've heard, whether it was from a pediatric visit, or somewhere else, I just say, well, here we are. We're going to work on a couple other things. We know a lot more about hearing loss, and there's a unilateral loss. And with supports, you know, I think that everything will be fine. Here's what we're going to start doing. And so I always sort of try and reframe that because it's devastating sometimes, I think, and it was for me. And then to be mourning this and to hear that, especially as a kid, that was tough.
Yeah, 17 is a pivotal moment in life.
Changed my whole life. And then later on, you know, now I have no, like literally no qualms with any of my audiologists. My audiologists that I've worked with have been fabulous. I think I could call them my friends at this point. And they made the process for choose easy. They made it easy for me. What the hardest battle was, and I still think is always going to be the insurance piece. And that I think individuals that have a single-sided loss that are going for a cochlear implant are always going to have to find a way to navigate that probably multiple times in a short amount of time if they're looking to get a CI. And that's hard.
It's gotten better. I mean, granted, insurance is insurance, but I think on that front, it has gotten a bit better. And you talk about the relationship you establish with your audiologists. I think that also is very representative that it seems like with our CI patients, those relationships are different. Yeah. You're interacting with those patients on a different level. You're spending a lot of time. It's very, what I would call labor intensive appointments. There's a lot of information, a lot of interaction. You're working with people when they're oftentimes not feeling at their best, and you are assisting them through that process. And you're a part of that process with them. You're a part of their story when it comes to their hearing loss and their treatment. So there's a lot of connection that has the opportunity to be established within that. So it sounds like you're in great hands and have really benefited from those relationships.
Definitely. I definitely have.
One question I want to leave you with or have you speak on is there are people like you, but for different reasons, who do suddenly lose their hearing, whether it's viral, whether it's an accident, sickness, just there are different ways that people can undergo something so sudden. What would you say to somebody who is just starting that process of learning how to navigate single-sided deafness when they this was not along their trajectory?
Man, what a question. I think for me, I have to put this into context of my overall recovery from my car accident, because it's all tied together. But when I think about navigating new circumstances, the first thing I always think of now, and what I wish I could go back and tell myself then, is to just be patient, to give yourself grace, and to just keep going. Because there's been several times, especially within the last few years, where I've wanted to say, if you knew then where you'd be now, you never would have given up, or you never would have doubted, or you never would have stopped. And there were a lot of times that I felt that way because of how much pushback or how hard it was. Or, I mean, I'll be flat out with you, I didn't do well in college with some of my grades because I was in these lecture intensive courses with no support. So that was difficult because you're getting information and I have to write notes, and I would go to study for exams and then I would go take the exams and fail it because I was missing part of the note that I never heard and never was able to process this information. It wasn't until I was in grad school and I was reading research about single-sided deafness that I realized a huge difficulty for me was my hearing loss, when I had been led to believe for so long that it wasn't. You have one good ear, you'll be fine. And so I kept thinking, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? And then I learned, nothing's wrong with me. I have a hearing loss. That's okay. So now I have to accommodate for it differently. And once I learned how to do that, learned how to advocate for myself, my things have been fabulous. And I don't say fabulous to say it's been easy. It hasn't been. Not everything is easy, but not everything is difficult either. And so I just, when you start new circumstances, navigating new circumstances, I think patience is the key. Giving yourself grace is a bigger key. And to just keep going, whatever, you know, in whatever avenue you choose, to just keep going.
Common threads and unique stories. Again, the idea of giving yourself grace, if I knew then what I know now to inform my outlook, how different it would be. We are hearing this from multiple people. It's a common thread. So whoever is hearing this that is on the front end of one of these journeys, it's going to get better. And for those that are looking to assist or mentor or do the type of work that you've done, it's such an important message to spread, because that idea of grief in the beginning, that you're mourning the loss of something, that something for you in your case changed, and you need to then adapt to, hey, your body, your life is different than you anticipated it being. But ultimately, it's going to be okay. And it's not going to be okay because one ear is good enough, but it's going to be okay because you have options and you're going to adapt with those options.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree with that. Yep.
We really appreciate you coming on today to share your story, hear about your CI journey and how you've been mentoring, educating others. It's going to be helpful for a lot of people to hear.
I really hope so. Thank you so much for asking me. It was such an honor.
Thank you so much for being with us and sharing your story. It's a good one to hear.